Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Alan Levy Show at blogtalkradio.com. Be prepared to call in now and chat with Alan and his very special guest right here at blogtalkradio.com. With no more further ado, please welcome your host, Mr. Alan Levy.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Alan Levy Show on Blog Talk Radio. And I'm your host, Alan Levy, the CEO and co-founder of Blog Talk Radio. And this show is airing live on July 25th at 4 p.m. Eastern and can be listened to at blogtalkradio.com. The archive of this show can be found at blogtalkradio.com/Alan Levy, or you can now find all of our shows on iTunes. And you could find my show in particular if you go into iTunes, the iTunes store and podcast, type in the word Blog Talk Radio, and my show will appear there along with 20 of our other top shows on a featured page on iTunes. So welcome to our show today. I'm very excited to have someone who I've known for 20 years, and I consider him a friend for a long time. Martin Versosky is my guest today, and I'm really excited about the conversation we'll have with Martin. He's a fascinating individual. If you'd like to call into the live show today, you can do so by dialing 347-677-0649. That's 347-677-0649. And if you like to, if you don't really feel like calling in, but you'd like to Skype in a question, my Skype name is Blog Talk Radio, and I'd be more than happy to take your question via IM. So I mentioned earlier, I've known Martin for a long time, and he's the founder and CEO of Phone, which is a really interesting company. We're going to learn about it. It could be found at phone.com. And it's my pleasure to welcome you today, Martin. How are you?
Very well. Nice to be here, Alan.
Very good. Thank you. Well, thank you for joining me on Blog Talk Radio. As I indicated on my blog, we've known each other for almost 20 years, so it's really exciting to see us each other evolve in this social media space.
Yes, indeed. I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you. So maybe you can give my listeners a little bit of your background on, you know, what you've done and then lead that into what you're doing now with Phone.
Okay, I'll give you maybe the one-minute version.
Sure.
I was born in Argentina, and I had to leave Argentina due to the dirty war, the civil war that there was there in the 70s, moved to the States, and was given a refugee visa by Senator Moynihan, together with my family, went to NYU, then to Columbia University, and failed to get all kinds of jobs, and I decided that since I couldn't get a job, I might as well invent my own. And so I built 7 companies over 20, 25 years. And the first one was in real estate, which I still own, Urban Capital Corporation, where you and I met. And from then on, it was mostly telecom and internet. Well, actually, I should say there was also a biotech company, which still operates in Montreal, Medicore Sciences. And after that, 5 companies in the telecom and internet space. So I built Viettel, where you and I worked together. Then I built Jazztel in Spain, which is the second largest publicly traded telco. It's worth around $1 billion now. I built Ya.com, which is this very successful both website, DSL operator that we built for 38 million euros and sold to Deutsche Telekom for 550 million euros. Then I built EinsteinNet, a company which I didn't do so well.
And you turned 25, right?
I built EinsteinNet. I lost 35 million euros there, but I came up with this cloud computing thing, which now is doing very well with Google and other companies. And then Phone, which is my latest venture, which has become the largest Wi-Fi network in the world. But so that's the one-minute version.
Very good. So before we get into Phone, which I definitely want to do, I want to just touch on a couple of things and say that, you know, when I met you, as I indicated in my blog, I was an accountant, and I was your accountant. And you had launched Viettel, and, you know, you embraced the thinking of, you know, my joining your company. And I thought I met you when you were in your late 20s, and you had achieved so much at such a young age, and you continue to to do some incredible things. And we jointly, you know, we worked together at a very exciting time. And the telecom, we were deep in the telecom space. And it's a fascinating time. And so later on, after we talk a little about phone, I want to compare the telecom space to what the social media space is today, and how do you see the two evolving in parallel in both environments. So
great.
I wanted to mention that. So let's talk about phone and what it is and how does it work and why is it relevant?
Well, phone, I'll answer your last question first. People understand phone when they remember the time when they were looking for Wi-Fi somewhere. I think we, most of us on the internet have been at one point the Wi-Fi beggars, I call them, people who say, is there Wi-Fi here? Is there Wi-Fi? Can I connect to Wi-Fi? Or you open your laptop, your Mac, and you look at all the Wi-Fi networks, hoping, wishing that one is open, or now your iPhone or the Nintendo DS or the PSP or all these different devices that many of them are Wi-Fi only. And you wish you had connectivity, you know, because basically Wi-Fi is phenomenal. It's fantastic. We all love it. But the truth is that outside of our homes, the world is pretty uncertain. So I created phone looking for Wi-Fi myself. This was 2005. I was in Paris, and I was begging for Wi-Fi. And I thought, how could I possibly convince these people in Paris whose networks are all locked? Because, by the way, other than the United States, in most countries, the operators give their services where they're with the Wi-Fi already locked, not like the Linksys that comes open or the Netgear that you, in any case, have to buy separate in the States. So I was begging for Wi-Fi in Paris, and I thought, well, maybe if all these people here in Paris knew that when they come to Madrid, where I live, I would share Wi-Fi with them, maybe they share Wi-Fi with me, and especially if everybody shares with everybody. So we came up with this concept of phone, which is share a little bandwidth at home and roam the world for free. And we experimented with that at the end of 2005. And I presented this to my now partners, Google, and the people at eBay and Skype, who are also my partners, and the people at Sequoia, a very successful VC firm in the States, and Index, also a very successful VC firm in Europe. And these people became, or these companies became my partners. They really liked the concept, and they became what we call phoneros, you know, people who believe in phone. And we call phone the phone movement, which got, because it's a telco built by the people. So that's basically it. You go to phone.com, you get a router, you share a little Wi-Fi at home, and you roam the world for free. And you can also make money with phone.
And how many phoneros are there?
Well, we have around 425,000 registered phoneros, and we have around 250,000 who got routers. And at any moment in time, we have around half of those on. But so, like, let's say 125,000. That gives you, to give you a sense of comparison, the largest Wi-Fi network in the world before phone by number of hotspots was T-Mobile, which is very well known because they're on Starbucks. But T-Mobile has 25,000 Wi-Fi hotspots, and we have five times that. And by the end of this year, we will be larger than all the other Wi-Fi networks in the world combined, including those of all the other operators, Telefonica, France Telecom, or NTT, or all the operators in the world put together. We will have more hotspots than all of them. So it's pretty sizable, even though the numbers are little when you think about social networks or things like that.
No, I think it's significant. It's obviously huge, and I know that you also have the you're above all the Starbucks as well. Is that right?
Yes, not all of them, but we had a promotion that if you lived near a Starbucks, it was we call it phone bucks, and what happens with Starbucks is that it costs a lot of money to connect, and at phone it's free if you're a phonero, meaning if you share somewhere and then you roam the world for free. But even if you aren't, you are what we call an alien, you know. And aliens are people who are not donors of phone, but are users of the phone network. And those pay $3 the first day and $2 every day thereafter. So $2 for 24 hours is much more reasonable than what T-Mobile charges at Starbucks. So we started a promo that we give routers away for free, so you can start your own hotspot if you live near Starbucks. And we got many of those going. And so now on many Starbucks, you have T-Mobile, but you have phone, which costs much less. But we still have a long way to go until we can say we have all of the Starbucks.
Right, okay. And how's this experience been based upon your other, you know, what are the challenges that you're running into as you're building this? Because, of course, you're an entrepreneur, and all companies that start up have challenges.
You and I went together when we were building Viatel through something that is similar in many ways to what's going on here, of course different in others. But what's similar is that Viatel was a global company from day one, right? Based on the callback, which is something that I came up with at the very early 90s. Also Howard Jonas at that time, he was one of these cases of simultaneous invention. We both came up with this idea around the same time, but the Viatel way was the way that was adopted then by everyone else. So we at Viatel, let's say, were the inventors of callback, a cheaper way of making a phone call through the United States. People would call a number in the States, and they would hang up, and our computers would register, and we would export American dial tone because America had the cheapest long-distance rates in the world, and people would go from Italy to Japan through Viatel, let's say. Now, that proposition was appealing to people in Argentina, people in Japan, people in Taiwan, people everywhere except the States where the system was based from. Now, that the similarity with phone is that phone is also global by nature, and it also appeals to everybody, including people in the States, because the desire to carry your Wi-Fi connection with you everywhere you go is very strong, because we all want connectivity, or all of us on the internet want connectivity. So that is the similarity. Now, the challenges are similar also to the ones we faced at Viatel. Some are regulatory, but we've been doing very well on that front because we have been able to prove to the telcos of the world, and some of them are our partners now, actually many are our partners, but at the beginning we had regulatory challenges. In the Viatel, we were more challenged because we couldn't really prove to the telcos in, let's say, France, that we were a great thing for France Telecom, right? Because we were selling cheaper services and the phone calls were going through the United States. But in the case of phone, we've been very good at teaming up with telcos, because with phone, the phonero, the person who shares Wi-Fi, is a stickier customer. There's less churn for the broadband company, because even when people are never at home, they don't disconnect their broadband connection, because if not, they stop their roaming capability, right? So we decrease churn, which is a big concern of the telcos. We also increase the uptake of broadband, because now you say pay at home. Now Verizon can say pay at home and roam the world for free, or NEF can say that, or AT&T can say that. Of course, NEF, by the way, is our partner. I'd like to clarify, and AT&T and Verizon aren't. But the result is that whether you're AT&T, Verizon, Comcast, or Time Warner Cable, who is a partner of ours, it's better if people sign up with phone, because you have a stickier customer who wants to stay with you and who's more likely to want to do broadband. So anyway, that was a big challenge at the beginning. Now we're converting a lot of telecom operators to our side. The second challenge that's important here that we didn't have at Viatel, but more difficult at phone, is the concept of critical mass. We're far from a situation where they say we think we need at least 3 million hotspots so you can reliably find phone in the major cities of the world. We only have a slightly active, let's say 125,000, sometimes 150,000, depending on how people connect them or disconnect them, but it's still very little, right? So we need to grow. We're growing at 500 to 1,000 a day. We still need 2-3 more years of growing like that and accelerating our growth to get to a situation where we have really good coverage. You know, this is something we're also achieving with operators. So that's another challenge. And lastly, I would say there's the human resource challenge. As Spaniards, and we're a Spanish company, when I was building the companies in the States with you, the one great thing about this country, about the United States, is that people think global. You know, it's not always a great thing. For example, sometimes the global policies of the United States, in some cases, environment or Iraq or whatever we may not like, But there's something wonderful about the American people, that is that they build a company and think the world is at least achievable, right? And that's what we were doing at Viettel. And this in Spain, very, very few people think global. People think already Catalonia is another country, Madrid, and I'm kidding. But or at least the Catalans think the other way around. But what I'm saying is it's difficult to get a group of Spanish people and build a global company. Now, at Fong, we've been able to find an incredible group of Spanish people, and on top of that, a lot of foreigners who came to Spain to work at Fong. So that's another challenge we had to deal with. And many times I remind the people who work at Fong of how important it is that we think, or we try to think, like the rest of the world thinks. And that's extremely hard because we are operating in Asia, in Europe, in the United States. So there's a lot of cultural challenges that we have had to deal with, dealing with the image of phone. So I would say those three, regulatory, the relationship with telecom operators, building a global company, these have been serious challenges that we have had to deal with.
Very good. Thank you. Why don't we take a call, and then we'll carry on. Hi, you're on Block Talk Radio, 647. Hello? Nope. Hold on a second. Let me just...
Am I in?
Yes, hi.
Hi, this is Mitch Gould calling. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Mitch? Do you have a question for Martin Varsovsky?
I have a... Yes, I do. I just want to comment first, if I could, that I'm a global thinker, and in the marketing of global thinking, and I'm looking at using the technology that Alan has for getting our message out globally, and I hadn't heard of Foam before that, so he's already working for you. It's
good.
A really good thing. Yeah.
Well,
as I heard you talk, I my mind went to Spain, where I introduced our program working with Federico Mera Zaragoza.
Yes.
And he's an associate of mine. And my question to you is, has someone like Federico been helpful for you in your global thinking? Because he is a global thinker.
I agree. I agree very much that he is. But we haven't been in touch with him vis-a-vis phone. But there have been a few, there's other examples of Spaniards. For example, the head of the IMF, Rodrigo Rato, is a Spaniard. He used to be the vice president of Spain, and he's definitely a global thinker. And there's also Javier Solana, who has been extremely active in the European Union, or I would say representing the European Union all over the world, including and particularly the Middle East, and extremely involved with global affairs. And there's, of course, in terms of companies, there's the Amancio Ortega, who's one of the wealthiest men in the world, certainly in the top 10. He founded Zara, an incredibly global company, clothing company, competitor to H&M, that it's many places in the States and Asia, and probably everywhere I go, I see a Zara, and he's done incredibly well building a global company. Interestingly, almost never leaving his hometown of La Coruña, and also being an extremely reclusive and anonymous person, of which only one picture is known of him. But Amancio, who I met, by the way, interestingly, because he wanted to learn about the internet, and he basically got a one-day tutorial from me a few years ago, and he's been, like I said, extremely successful. There's also the owners of Mango, another clothing company that has gone global with great, great success. There's Banco Santander, which has grown in some other countries and also very successful. Telefonica has become the most valuable telecom operator in Europe, second most valuable after Vodafone, and I think that after Vodafone and after this Chinese, the huge Chinese company, which is the largest mobile carrier in the world, it is more valuable than Verizon or AT&T or almost up there. So they have built not a global company but a European Latin American company. So there's some examples of Spanish people. And again, I'm an Argentine immigrant in Spain. Yes, Spanish people who have done extremely well. But there are very, very few compared to even small countries like Sweden that has 25% or 20% of the population of Spain and has built many global companies like IKEA and Ericsson and many others. So let's say it's new to Spain, to go global. They were global in the 15, 1600s, but they retreated after that, and they're only beginning to go global again.
Well, this sort of looks up what I heard from you was that you're growing at 1,000 people a day, and for some businesses that may say, wow, isn't that tremendously successful? And I say, and I listen to it and I say, hold it, that's going to take too long. He has to move it faster. How can we move it faster? And then so that's the thing that triggered in my mind, and that was why I asked the question about Federico, mainly because he might be able to facilitate that other growth, although you did mention other people that also could facilitate that growth, which leads to my second question is, what is the obstacles to accelerating your growth?
Very good. Thank you, Mitch, for your calls.
Okay. Well, I would say one of the challenges we face is that we're a company that's being funded with a very, very small amount of money. Even though we have some of the wealthiest partners or most successful partners in the world, in the sense of companies like eBay, Google, who are our partners, or the largest VC firms in the world are our partners, we have been extremely cautious, especially after the experience of the Web 1.0, in the amount of money we raised. So we've raised 28 million euros, which, as Alan knows very well, the kind of money we used to raise for Viettel, which is close to a billion, it's an extremely small amount of money to build a global wireless company. But we'd rather go slowly and carefully and well. But that means growing at, like I said, 1,500 to 1,000 hotspots a day. But that still makes us grow a T-Mobile every month. So it's not that slow.
Right. Well, thank you, Mitch, for your calls. It was great questions. We have another caller, which we'll take in a minute. But I know that you're also very active in blogging. I mean, it's one of the things. Is it a passion of yours? And you know, I personally, before I launched Blog Talk Radio, I wasn't that familiar with blogging. And, in fact, you were helpful to me when I first got involved in this when my dad was ill, and then I created this platform, Blog Talk Radio, and we spent time talking together, and I learned from you and checked out your blog, and you really embraced these new technologies, and you met, and the thing that amazed me, too, is that not only did you embrace these new technologies, but you met people that have been doing this for years and years, and you became involved in these circles, and I think that's a very difficult thing for almost anybody to break in this A-list, you know, they call it the A-list crowd. But how did you go about, you know, really establishing yourself in social media and the Web 2.0 space?
Well, when John Lennon used to say, life is what happened to you, what happens to you while you're making other plans. And I didn't try to become a top blogger by blogging. Since I was at school, even when I was at NYU and Columbia University, I used to pay part of my studies by being a journalist. I was a correspondent for Mercado and Ámbito Financiero, these Argentine and Spanish magazines, well, Argentine newspaper and Spanish magazine. And writing it's been part of my life since I was a student, and I used to keep a diary myself. And when blogging came along, I was introduced to it by my dear friend Joichi Ito, and also by Loic Lemaire. And Joichi and Loic Lemaire were very early bloggers, extremely successful bloggers, and they said, you're a natural for blogging because you write and you like to express yourself, you speak at a lot of conferences. So I started my blog, martinvarsavsky.net, thinking that I would just, you know, share some ideas. But as my blogging and recently my tweeting has always in some way broken some rules of what blogging and tweeting is. I did not turn my blog into a diary of myself, as many other people have done. I really only blog, or almost only blog, about ideas. So it's a blog of ideas. It's a blog. It's not a blog of what am I doing right now, including my tweeting. I'm Martin Vars in Twitter. And I never tell anybody what I'm doing right now. So I basically went to the Twitter platform and changed the rules. And so what I do is I share my ideas. And some people have criticized that, and they say, well, it's not a broadcasting platform for your ideas. Like, this is a blog, it's a diary on the internet, but I don't care. You know, I'm not going to tell people what I'm doing every day because I want my privacy, and also because everybody can do whatever they want. And I think my contribution is not what I'm doing every day, but it's really my ideas. So I think many people like that, and I have maybe 300,000 unique readers every month. And what people like is that they get to see, for example, Fawn, all the R&D or my new ideas for Fawn I blog. Sometimes people are confused and they say, but is this an announcement? Like, are you announcing this? And I'm like, no, this is not an announcement. This is just brainstorming here in my blog. I'm brainstorming. I'm having ideas. For example, there's a post that I recently wrote that's called "Are Femtocells with Wi-Fi the Future of Fawn?" And femtocells are extremely interesting because they are like Fawneras, but connected to 3G. So, for example, in America, where there's really bad cellular services, I don't know if people realize here how bad it is, and unless you travel to Europe or Asia, the phone calls get dropped. The quality of the phone call is very poor. Well, one of the reasons why the quality is so bad is because there's a lot of resistance in America. There's a lot of people who think that antennas are ugly, which they are, and that they're harmful to your health, which I don't think they are. But in any case, I agree that they're ugly. So femtocells are like mini, very small mini antennas that you put on your window, sort of like Fawneras, the same thing, like Wi-Fi routers. So I wrote a post that says, "Are femtocells with Wi-Fi the future of phone?" Because Google also invested into a femtocell company this week, and they announced that called Ubiquisys. And people say, but is this an announcement? Does that mean that the next Fawnera will be a femtofonera? And I'm like, no, you don't understand my blog. It's not an announcement. It's an idea that I had that we should do femtofoneras. And now I use my blog to test that idea. So some people may tell me that it's a terrible idea. Some other people may think that it's a good idea, but you should change this, you should change that. So if anything, my blog is collaborative brainstorming more than some anecdote about what am I doing today or yesterday or the day before. And the other thing I wanted to say is that my blog is in Spanish and English, and I do not write the same things in Spanish and English, which I also have been criticized for. But I think that these are two very different cultures, and if I tell you the latest story about some Spanish football player in my blog in English, nobody would care about it. So it's just different cultures, different ideas. That's basically it.
Perfect. Let's take another call and see who's on the line. We've got a 416. You're on Blog Talk Radio with Martin Versovsky. Hello?
Oh, it's Mitch. I was just listening.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you a 416? I thought you were on a 647 line.
No. I'm just listening. I can talk more if you want.
No. That's okay. You can listen in. You can actually listen in on these lines and while you're on the show. So, actually, it's interesting. We had Jennifer Hudson on one of our shows here, Martin.
Yes.
And we had 1,500 live listeners who actually clicked that live listen button. And we had 149 were waiting to speak to her before the show started. And the way we built it, it's like radio, where if people are calling in, all 149 are listening to the live stream on the phone as they're dialing into the show, as they're listening to the show, waiting to be queued up to be brought on air.
Yes, I'm not surprised.
It's very, very interesting. And,
yeah, I'm not surprised in the sense that all these mass media phenomenons people go crazy for.
Well, I think that when I first presented you with the idea of Blog Talk Radio, you were intrigued by the convergence of phone, the oldest technology, and I use this, of course, because you're the best at the capturing these phrases, I think. Merging phone, the oldest technology, with the new technology, Web 2.0.
Yes. No, and it's funny because you have your company is called Blog Talk Radio. Mine is called Phone. So it's sort of like it's bringing the old in the new and reshaped and in a way that people can relate to and understand. In my case, also, I couldn't resist the opportunity of naming my company with a three-letter domain. that's so memorable. So that also helped. But yes, it's the integration of the old and the new.
Yeah, it's interesting because we'll be getting a lot of calls now. Actually, we got a phone call from someone who read your blog. He's based in the UK. His name is Andrew, and he wants to incorporate Blog Talk Radio in one of the internet Wi-Fi devices that they're building. He's friendly with someone who worked with you, was at Skype, interestingly, and he wanted, we have all this content, and he was interested in getting our content on their platform. We've produced more than 17,000 broadcasts since September on Blog Talk Radio. So that was something we got in yesterday.
Very good. I'm glad to help.
Yes, thank you. Let's talk a little about we talked about the YouTube CNN debate, and I thought it would be interesting if we could just chat about that for a few minutes. And what was your thought on this? And where do you see social media? And do you consider yourself part of social media with phone?
Yes. Well, we're the difference between us and social media in general is that phone is more an enabler of social media than a participant. Well, we are partly a participant because at Phone, Phoneros put themselves into a map, and they start saying things about themselves in this map. For example, if you're a Phonero and somebody comes to, near your home, they can have free access to your blog, even if they are not Phoneros themselves, right? So you can promote your blog, you can promote your political party, you can promote your favorite NGO, you can promote Amnesty International, you can do anything. So there is an element of social media in phone that's pretty strong, and it's also a sense of it's also an aspirational element on phone because people like the idea of connecting others. They like the idea of being helpful. So instead of user-generated content, phone is a user-generated network. So I think there's a big analogy there. But going back to the other part of your question, which is YouTube, I think that the YouTube CNN debate was fascinating. I happen to have the chief policy officer of Google, who's my good friend, my dear friend, Andrew McLaughlin, who was staying with his wife at our house here in the Hamptons, where we have a vacation home. We normally live in Spain, but we have a vacation home there. And so he flew into Charleston to, be one of the organizers of the debate. So I got somewhat of an inside scoop of what was going on. And I thought it was an incredibly successful format, so successful that it was the first time that I would say a group of the best political candidates that we've seen in a long time, because even though I'm not a U.S. citizen, I favor the Democratic Party, which I think is the one that's more in sync with the way we think about in Europe and in many parts of the world, especially lately with all the issues of Iraq and so on. But these people, including Obama, Hillary Clinton, Dodd, Biden, and so many smart people, were really eclipsed by the YouTube questioners. So the YouTube questions were surprising, were funny, were shocking. The guy with a machine gun who said, "How are you going to protect this baby?" That was certainly bizarre to me. And then Biden, who was so good, and he says, "Well, if that's your baby, you need help." I thought that was very funny and very accurate. That's exactly what I thought when I saw this person in love with his machine gun. So I think it's a new format. Now, on the negative, I would say that this format that we're talking about, we're using now, is interactive, and that format would be interactive if it was live, and it wasn't. So it's not all positive, but it was very good.
That was a big step, and I think CNN and YouTube were the winners of that. And, you know, it's just difficult to... We have a lot of political dialogue on Blog Talk Radio. We have got bloggers on the right, bloggers on the left, and we have a lot of Huffington Post bloggers. I know you post it at Huffington, and we have Pajama Media bloggers. And our most popular shows are not those that have, you know, we've had Bill Richardson on, we've had John Kerry, Wes Clark, John McCain. Our most popular shows are shows amongst our bloggers. and you know, I want to create blogging debates, and I want to have live interaction. I think that's what people are interested in.
Yes.
People are interested in hearing other people talk, but when you hear these candidates and their canned responses, it's very you cannot feel close to them. So, in fact, John McCain did a show on Blog Talk Radio. He was a guest on a show last Thursday, and they really loved it. Now, of course, the McCain campaign is really hurting, but they want to get closer to the people, and I think Blog Talk Radio and venues like this gives them an opportunity to interact with everyday people.
Yes, and also the fact that it stays online, people can pick it up later, so it's interactive, and if you didn't get a chance, you have your TiVo moment, and you see it later.
Exactly, that's the key, and most listeners do listen on demand, not live. In fact, Brad Thor, the author, I don't know if you're familiar with him, he's doing a live virtual book tour event on Blog Talk Radio Thursday night, which is interesting. So if you think about how few authors are sent on book tours around the country, what, 1% maybe? I don't even think that many. But, you know, with venues like this and even utilizing phone, it would be interesting to see how Blog Talk Radio and phone could even do some things in the future.
Yes.
You mentioned Twitter. Let's talk a little about Twitter, and then have you used Jaiku or Pounce,
yes,
or some of these other applications?
Yes, I have, and in fact, I'm friends with the founders of Jaiku, and Jaiku has a lot of good features, and I like Jaiku as well. And also, I am an investor in a somewhat similar platform in Spanish called Notame. So I'm familiar with all the alternatives, and I think they serve a similar need, which is a need of self-expression. But also, the way most people use Twitter is to coordinate an agenda or sort of like a mass SMS system that they can share with a group of friends what they're doing. Many people who are clubbing, they say we're all moving to this club, we're moving to that. It's with a mini crowd concept of little crowds moving from here to there, and it's sort of like a broadcasting system for mini crowds. Now, the as I was saying before, to me that kind of doesn't work because I don't want to be at a restaurant. I mean, Loïc Lemaire, my friend who's the top French blogger, who's now moved to San Francisco actually yesterday, he was saying, well, I'm tweeting that I'm in this restaurant in Paris, and then people just show up, right? Random people show up. Now, he's got, I don't know, maybe 700 people who are followers in his Twitter, and I have maybe, I don't know, 350 last time I looked, and I frankly don't want people to show up at the restaurant when I'm having dinner with my kids or my family or my friends or whoever. So to me, that doesn't work. It just doesn't work like that. The best use that I make of Twitter, and it's only, I think, really understood if you go to Twitter and you put Martin Bars, is that I basically point out paradoxes or things that I find surprising, unusual, shocking. And many times, first, a Twitter is like an announcement of an idea that comes to me, which then goes on and becomes a blog post, right? So it's sort of like the predecessor of a blog post.
Microblogging, they call it.
Yes. So it's like microblogging.
Yes. I mean, to me, I'm not really involved with it. I'm too busy with this. But we are using Twitter in our new site launch to alert people, to let people know their show, you know, hey, my show's going to start in a half hour. Here's the URL. You know, notifications like that, I think it's a great thing. And
have yes. It, actually, have that would have been... That would have been a very good idea, yes. That would have been one of the few moments in which people, you know, could have been alerted. I just brought Twitter up on my screen as we were talking, and when I read the last ones, I'm just going to read you an example of the last ones. So the last one was about the YouTube debate, and I said that the YouTube debate made the time cover come true. The clip makers were the protagonists, so that's one. Or another one I wrote, in New Hampshire, it's legal to drive without a seatbelt. Live free or die. You know, and it's little things like that I write. Or wrote, people with phobias are at a higher risk than the average person. as their obsession crowds out other risks. Or it's just things that I think...
Like Chinese cookies.
The Martin Varsavsky Chinese cookies, yeah, fortune cookies.
It's Martin Varsavsky's fortune cookies.
Yeah, exactly,
little,
there you go. I could tweet that one, in fact, right now. That one is a good one.
Yeah, but we're using Twitter because we think it's a good app for alerting people, you know, here my show's on, here's the URL, you know, and not just sending either an SMS or a Twitter. I think it's just oversaturated, and I agree with you. You know, I'm heading to the bathroom, or I'm there now. And I think, obviously, when it first launched, that was the fascination with it. And, you know, and that's waned a bit. I think it's waned a bit. And, you know, I read some of the blogs from Dave Weiner and Scoble and a lot of these guys, and now they're talking about Facebook. Are you active with Facebook? Are you involved in that community?
Yes, I was with Owen and Chris Kelly of Facebook. With Owen 2 weeks ago in Sun Valley at the conference, the Allen & Company conference, and 2 weeks before that, maybe I visited Facebook, their offices, and I was with Chris Kelly, and I've been on Facebook for a year and a half. And I've seen it grow like crazy in the last maybe 8 months, and especially in the last three since they opened the apps.
Yes.
I've also publicly said that I think Facebook will probably sell for something like $10 billion, and I really believe that. I think that it's sort of becoming the mother of all social networks. I also think Facebook will probably surpass MySpace by the middle of next year, and it will become the number one social network. I also think Facebook is a proof, when you compare Second Life and Facebook, I think Facebook is a proof that anonymity, because everybody says that people like to be anonymous and have a Second Life and like to fantasize and like to be someone else on the Internet, or that famous New Yorker cartoon of a dog that's on the Internet and he says, I love the Internet because nobody can tell you're a dog. But the truth is that Facebook won or is winning because it is not anonymous. And in fact, Chris Kelly from Facebook was telling me that they have a group of people at Facebook who delete the profiles of people who they think are lying about who they are, right? Because how can you build a social network lying, you know, about who you are, or trying to be anonymous and making friends anonymously, and that goes against the rules of Facebook. Facebook. It's you have to say who you are. So I'm personally in favor of anonymity, especially in countries like China, or countries where people may have reason to fear about what they say. And also, whoever wants to be anonymous is fine with me. But overall, I'm glad that showing up and saying who you are has won, because if the largest social network was a social network made of anonymous people, I don't know, I would kind of feel uncomfortable.
Well, Second Life, I think the interest has waned as well. I mean, do you feel that, you know, have you been in there? To me, I was in there once, and I felt I have, you know, I'm busy enough in this life, let alone a Second Life.
Yes. No, I understand what you mean. I think that what happens to Second Life is that the membership grows, the amount of people on Second Life is somewhere around 50,000 and it's kind of stuck there. The amount of people in Second Life at any one moment in time, which is 50,000 is significant, it's significant. But if you think, for example, that at any moment in time there's like 8 million people on Skype or even 2 million people using Azurius, the peer-to-peer program, or many other things are used by millions of people. 50,000 people, it's just not a lot of people.
Right. I completely agree. We have a few more moments with Martin, and if you'd like, you can call 347-677-0649. We've looked at the Facebook app, and we're gonna move there as well. I think it's important. You know, again, what we do is facilitate these conversations, and I think it's and we've talked about this globally, and I really look forward to, you know, working with you and talking to you about Europe and what Blog Talk Radio potentially could do there. Do you see something like this as a useful tool?
Yes, it's interesting because the yes, very much so, because in Europe, not only that there's talk radio like there is in America, but there's many, and especially in the Latin countries of Europe, Italy, Spain, anything that involves talking has been immensely popular. Like the amount of minutes that people talk in Latin countries over the phone has been such a blessing for Telecom Italia, Telefonica. I mean, people just go crazy. They love talking. So this combination of the internet and voice and talking as a form of self-expression, I think would do very well. So yes, I think you have a lot of potential in Europe, and what all you have to do is launch your service in French, in German, in Spanish, in Italian, you know, the largest.
And that's what we're doing. The new site launch, which is due out probably around September 1st, will have four languages. So
yes.
Fully, you know, again, the conversations are in the native tongue, but the frames will all be in, and we have, you know, we'll all be in the local language. And we have our fourth largest show is a political Brazilian named Olavo de Caravello. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He's center-right, and he does a show from Virginia because he was escorted out of the country because he's center-right. And he does a show every week at 7 p.m. from beginning to end in Portuguese. And he gets almost 500 live listeners to the show, which is a lot for people at a moment clicking on that button to listen live, mostly from Brazil. And he gets 3,000 to 4,000 downloads per show. With no fancy tools and no promotion, very little. So it's very interesting that
yes.
Something like that can take place. So
yes, no. I think there's a lot of interest in hearing people express themselves, and that's going to be a big success in other parts of the world, Asia, Latin America, Europe.
Excellent. The last question, and we'll go, and I want to thank you, that I have here for you, and I noted down, I was thinking about this, is you have achieved so much success in your, you know, someone who could say that they lost 35 million euros made a lot of money, okay? Someone who could admit to it losing 35 million euros in Einstein that has been successful, and you no doubt have had a lot of success, and you continue to now with phone, what drives you, you know?
I haven't mentioned my foundations and the things I do that relate to. I have Educar, which is the largest project to connect people to the internet and improve the education process in Argentina, Chile, Educar Chile. I also have another foundation, Safe Democracy. Educar is a project that I started, and then was the donation was given to the Ministry of Education of Argentina, and it took off from there. And Safe Democracy, we hosted the largest conference on terrorism, and the page is safedemocracy.org. People can look it up. Educar is educ.ar, and also Varsavsky Foundation. .org, and so a lot of what drives me is the ability to then eventually do these things, which make me very happy. And I've donated already $15 million in these two efforts, and plan to continue with that. And that's part of gives me tremendous satisfaction. Two different things in Europe. I deal with the conflict resolution and peace processes and how democracies can fight terrorism without losing their spirit as democracies, and in Latin America about improving education. But then from the entrepreneur's point of view, I think I'm a victim of my own ideas. I just can't stop. I have a new idea, and they don't come every day. It took me like 3 years between Yeah.com and phone to find, you know, a very good, interesting idea. But when they come, they have such a compelling force on me that I can't stay still and not go ahead and try to execute this idea. And probably with phone, I have a few more years to go. You and I were together in Viettel for 6, 7, 8 years. I think I've been a year and a half with phone. I see a lot of potential here. It's another wave that may take 5 years or so until we have a really substantial global wireless network. But I'm very driven by this, and it's basically the same thought since you and I met, the same thought since 1990, the same, which is to provide better, cheaper, more original, more creative, more unique style of communications. And I just love that. And I love the internet, and I'll just go on doing this because that's what I love to do.
Well, you're, as I told you, and you know, you're a fascinating individual and a friend, and I thank you for being a guest on my show today. Once again, Martin Versovsky has been a guest on the Alan Levy Show. The archive of this can be found at blogtalkradio.com/Alan Levy. You can actually pull the MP3 from here. We'll send the MP3 over to you, Martin, in case you'd like to have your children listen to it. Will they hear this enough? but we could post it on your blog. You could post it there or wherever. You may have. I know you have lots of fans, and people like to know more.
Oh, I'll
about
definitely
you.
Post this on my blog for sure.
Right. So we'll provide you with the badge and maybe the little flash player, and you could do that. And maybe we could even persuade you to come on and do a show on Blog Talk Radio every once in a while and talk about and bring some people together on this platform.
Very good.
To talk about some charitable endeavors or whatever else you'd like to do. So once
yes.
again,
no, I am planning to do that.
Very good. Well, thank you, Martin.
No, thank you for having me, Alan.
For joining me. You've been listening to Martin Versovsky and Alan Levy on the Alan Levy Show. It's been a wonderful almost hour, and thank you for joining me. We have lots of things going on. We have the one-year anniversary of Blog Talk Radio on July 31st, and that's going to be an exciting. We're going to promote that, and we're going to have clips from a lot of shows that have occurred during the year. Some highlights, and there have been many, and it's hard to believe, but we're at this almost 1 year, so we're very excited. Once again, thank you for joining me today, and have a good afternoon. Bye-bye.